them down.
There's more, lots more.
Folks, and you are about to win more. Welcome back to the show where it is not wrestling with your conscience. It is not wrestling with your budget. It is wrestling with emotion, and is brought to you by the region's premier entertainment destination, Batavia Downs. Get to your local OTB to get on the action, or go to Batavia Downs for one of their many awesome events on the weekend, or just go to run it up and gamble in a little bit. But you know you're not gambling with this panel. You know you're getting the sure thing. It's Slick Saturday. It's the Prophet, Rob Ryan. It is the head of the table, Mikey J. Partham. Gentlemen, welcome. Good evening. Let's get right into it. We have the AEW recap up right up. Let's go Parthy, Rob, Slick. Favorite storyline across all of wrestling right now?
Amazingly, it's the Bloodline. It's still the Bloodline, but it's a whole new Bloodline that's apparently coming around. They have a new member, and we know that they're in line for a few, maybe one or two more. This intrigue about who's the head of the table now, what's Tama and Solo talking about by orders of the tribal chief, and Paul Heyman sitting there like, what do they mean by that? That's not what Roman Reigns ordered. So who's pulling the strings? Who's got the new lay or whatever they call it that is bestowed upon the tribal chief? We don't know. And it's going to be intriguing going forward here. Something we haven't said about the Bloodline in a little bit of while. Well, since The Rock came back, you know, the final boss, that was certainly a big new wrinkle for them. But now that he's gone and this is coming up, it's a new refreshing time for the Bloodline. Amazing to say after 4 years that it keeps finding a way to refresh itself.
Yeah, well, once again, this is my show. People are taking my thoughts. So, you know, you gotta cut it with that. Cut it. Like, but I have to agree, it's definitely the Bloodline. You know, who thought a storyline at WWE could last this long? We thought it was all over last WrestleMania, and we didn't know what they could do with Roman winning against Cody. And obviously then they had the Jay turn, which brought to SummerSlam. Then we had Jimmy turning on Jay, which added that wrinkle to it. And now, once again, even without Roman here for a couple months, we had The Rock coming back. We thought maybe that would cause some havoc. But clearly, as of right now, obviously they're building towards it. But as of right now, Roman and Rock are still on the same page. And now we have this new Bloodline with Tama Tonga, Solo becoming the tribal chief as of right now, obviously until probably The Rock comes back, and we still have Jacob Fatu waiting in the wings to come back, and we even have a Uso team up coming back probably with Jimmy turning face. Obviously Roman's going to turn face, and who knows when they could have this. We've seen it. They could have the new Bloodline versus the old Bloodline, maybe at War Games. As Paul Heyman said, we're only in the third inning here, so we'll see what happens.
Well, I am not a fan yet of the new Bloodline stuff. I mean, Solo's calling the shots all of a sudden when he hasn't won a match in what, almost a year. But I digress. For reasons that you guys just picked, I was gonna say Sami Zayn, but I'm gonna jump to the other brand and go Swerve Strickland and Samoa Joe. I think this rivalry has been great from the start, even when it did involve Hangman and Page in that three-way. Now, obviously, Swerve going into the picture, fan favorite, new commercial with just him in it, I might add, that aired last night. The momentum is still there. He's still hot. He's still over. And this really does feel like that tipping point for Swerve Strickland and that era of AEW. So that's what I'm going to say.
I'm going to split the middle here. Slick, you were right on it with Sami Zayn. They're doing a great job with that storyline. What does he do right after the title? He defends it, and he encounters some adversity. He gets basically made to look like a sucker in his hometown where he's a hero. So that was great. That was great storytelling and in-ring action, of course, on that side. The one thing I'm going to flip to AEW real quick, I mean, I know they've gotten some criticism from people on this show about their booking and their long-term storytelling abilities. I will say that right now, the board is completely, like, fresh and clean for, like, all new starts. If you look at the Dynasty matches, I think there's a lot of potential on what can happen out of there and where things can go. So super excited about that. It's not as particularly a storyline, but there's many storylines in AEW that are exciting and can't wait to get into. So with that said, let's get into some Dynamite action. So right away, I think we were all on the same page for everyone who saw it, but the segment between Hook, Jericho, and Taz, no bueno.
Eh.
I mean, you don't need to bring Taz back into this. It feels just like a ploy because Taz is obviously a fan favorite on commentary and what he did back in ECW days. But it feels like a ploy to yet again try and get his son over. And I think the fans do like his son. It's not that they don't. But I feel like it's a constant excuse to have Hook on television. And I feel like it's the same way with Jericho, but for completely different reasons at this point. It's just an excuse to have him on television as well. And then those two don't brew together. This feels like a forced segment that we don't need to begin with. And now having Taz involved is just very unnecessary. And to quote the fans, when Dwayne and Cody were exchanging belts, it was awkward.
Mute.
How did I mute Monster myself? I'm going to jump in here, and then the bottom row can finish this one off. Speaking of awkward, the Jericho Vortex. What are we talking about?
He's using all these insider terms that have been used to describe him. Yeah. It's sort of like they're leaning into it, but he's leaning
it's
too much into
too
it.
It's a little too much of a lean. It's way too much of a lean for sure. And again, I love a good lean. I love a good fourth wall break. But the Jericho Vortex is too much. And by the way, am I crazy? And this is where AEW might deserve like some, you know, criticism or whatnot. Wasn't the whole getting Hook over, not just his entire run to this point, his ability and talents that he's shown off to this point, but wasn't the real him getting over when he battled Samoa Joe for the title and kind of like didn't back down and never gave up? And it was like, you know, it was establishing this character, this guy who would just brawl no matter what till there wasn't like a breath left in his body. Now we have to have him go through the Jericho Vortex for that. That doesn't make sense to me, guys.
No. And you know, we had that Tony Khan versus Jinder Mahal battle because of that Hook Joe. But I think Jericho needs time off. He's been one of those guys who've been here since the start. And I mean, he's 50 something years old. And I think he's just running out of gas. I'm tired of seeing Jericho. He's a legend, but he's just in these just awkward storylines over and over again. I think it's either Jericho needs to either take time off or just call it quits and do something else. I'm just tired of seeing Jericho on my screen every week, especially for the last 5 years since AEW. And it's just, there's guys like that should be taking time off. That's the good thing about WWE is that they let guys take, after a storyline, they let these guys take off. Where AEW, it's like, why are we seeing Jericho every week?
Partham?
Yeah, I think everybody's pretty much burned out on Jericho. I think they might recognize that because when's the last time we heard him come out to Judas where everybody's singing along? And that's the one part of Jericho that's still over. They're having him come out to his old, White Zombie theme song from what, back in his ECW days or whenever he had it. So I think they recognize that people are burnt out on Jericho, but I don't think they're bringing it to a logical conclusion, i.e., you know, giving him a storyline that's eventually going to have him take off for a while. They're just more there. As we said, they're leaning into it, but they're not, you know, taking the advice of the fans and drawing back Jericho. And of course he's got a lot of influence in that company being the first champion and being an original from day one. I don't know if they know how to, you know, not have Jericho on their show if he's available, or maybe Jericho just doesn't want to not be on the show, or I don't know how it would work.
He doesn't need to be on TV.
Obviously, of course, but, to someone to tell him that.
Yeah. You know what it is, though? And I'll just put a button on this. I mean, if we don't want to, you know, get too much more into the storyline there. But, you know, it's like any athlete, right, who has a great run, anything like that. Like Jericho in AEW, you know, 2019, 2020, 2021 was really something, for lack of a better term, special.
Special.
So yeah. With that said, 2022, 23, and now 24 – it seems like they're almost just trying to play the hits in that regard and kind of rewrite what they've already done. But I mean, yeah, I think you guys have kind of said, you know, made the point already. Jericho needs to kind of go back to the core values and kind of look after himself instead of worrying about, you know, putting people through the Jericho Vortex.
I know you're a wizard, but like, let's chill with the Vortex talk, you know,
make yourself disappear, Jericho.
So, not a lot of surprising results last night on Dynamite. I guess unless you consider Hart and Brody King going over Copeland and Nightingale, surprise. But besides that, you had the Elite taking down Pac. Our boy Daniel Garcia got killed.
Hmm.
Not even
that
like,
rainmaker,
didn't
that
even
rainmaker
lose.
Was nasty.
Yeah. That Rainmaker might as well have had the coin drop sound attached to it.
I believe it was a double super kick into a Rainmaker too, which is just...
it's that's not quite a Simone spike into a spear, but okay.
It's about as elite as it gets. But let me tell you something. That matchup, Okada and Pac, might steal the show at Dynasty. That is going to be an absolute banger, as the kids say. And anything involved with the Elite at this point, EVPs, grabs my attention. I think they're real characters. I wasn't too keen on this FTR thing again after we had the third matchup at Wembley. But then when I found out last night that there's ladders involved, I got a little more excited. I mean, shit, I'll watch the Young Bucks and FTR wrestle any day of the week. I just don't think they needed another program at this point.
Well, the introduction of ladders and the idea that, you know, someone can come along and in a basically a no rules match, we know what's about to happen, right, Prophet?
Oh yeah, Jack Perry's coming back.
That's where I was together at maybe like Sunday's show, but
yeah, I mean, we'll save the predictions for them, but he's got to come back. Obviously, we talked about it all of last week. We had our difference of opinions on it. I just don't see. Obviously, they say they built it for this storyline, so obviously they need him to be there on Sunday. Obviously Perry fought back this week over in, he's got to come back, but obviously, especially AEW, they put on a banger of a ladder match. We saw a banger of a ladder match last weekend. So they're going to over the top on it. Maybe they'll have, not foam ladders. That was kind of funny to watch though. But this, I think this will be a banger. You know, as Slick said, you know, they fought a lot, but you can never complain when those two teams are in a match, especially in ladders. They're going to be flying all over the place. Someone will get hurt in that match.
Yeah, I agree. What the hell is Trent Beretta and Matt Sydal doing in Zero Hour, I have to say?
Beretta turned on the best friends.
I mean, it has to just be, yeah, well, I know that, but like Matt Sydal hasn't been on a TV in yonks unless it's Rampage, which no one watches. Yeah. But the only thing I can predict here is that Trent Beretta and Orange Cassidy, both in Zero Hour, is on purpose.
What really pisses me off at Zero Hour, if we're talking about it, I mean, Jay White, they are burying the shit out of that dude. What the hell are they doing?
Well, why is that Zero Hour?
Well, you know, we'll save the predictions for Sunday or Saturday, whenever we're available. But hopefully they can get Jay White's shine back with this match, at least the unification of the Trios titles on ROH and AEW, which is long overdue because I don't think there's enough talent in ROH to justify six-man titles.
Okay, I want to get into this because I think this is a topic. This match absolutely does not belong on Zero Hour. So the question is, Reed, is this kind of like a main event of Zero Hour where this match is going to be so good that they're hoping for like last-minute buys or to get people into kind of AEW at the last minute in the digital sphere? Because this is going to be on YouTube, obviously, for the Zero Hour. That's my only thought process on that match being where it is, because otherwise it makes zero sense.
Yeah, it has to be. It's kind of weird. Like, we talk about how AEW and storylines, this is one of those matches that has had a story for quite a while now. Why are they on Zero Hour? Did they, like, think about it at the last second? Oh, my God, we need to have this match on there, and they ran out of space on the main card? It just doesn't make much sense to me.
The Acclaimed and the Ass Boys are legitimately, like, you want to get into the pillars of tag teams in AEW. Like, they're who I think of. So, yeah.
You should have Hook and Jericho on Zero Hour instead of that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, it's a no-brainer. But
I mean, I wouldn't want to keep Hook in the Zero Hour for, you know, ever more. It seems like that's his usual spot, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean... Dude, the Bang Gang.
Working with Jericho, of all people, yeah, I would say for this particular time, yeah, Hook and Jericho would be more appropriate for Zero Hour.
And if we're not getting Adam Cole, I mean, move that international championship match down. No offense to those guys.
Yeah, but speaking of Adam Cole, who knows when he's coming back? Those reports.
I feel like that international title picture is a title picture you could definitely throw Jay White into the bag of. Just saying.
No, I agree. That would be a great way to get him up the card for sure. Maybe that's something that's happened. Again, I think it's kind of a spin zone that match is put there, and that's a credit to those guys. As crazy as it sounds, because they definitely deserve a little bit more shine than Zero Hour. But with that said, for Dynasty Talk, real quick, to put a button on AEW everything, What match outside of the bottom row are you most excited for this Sunday?
I'll go first because I think I gave away my answer already, and that's Pac and Kazuchika Okada. I think that's going to be a really fun match. It's going to have a lot of cool elements to it. Pac can both these guys can hit hard as hell, but Pac obviously with that high flying aspect, and Okada can go toe to toe with anybody in the world. So that continental title, I should say. I like how they separated that from the Triple Crown, and I think Okada is a great guy to have that by itself for the first time. And this match it might steal the show, like I said.
Yeah, I'm going to choose someone different just so we can all have different ones, and I obviously know who Maniac's going to pick. So I'll finish off that third row, and I'll go with Julia Hart and Willow. I think that should be a good match, and we obviously know who's waiting in the wings. The money is waiting in the wings for whoever wins that match. So I think that should be a good one. Obviously, we'll probably have some money involved in there, and we'll see where that ends up.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about, the banger match in the third row is Pac and, Okada. But from a storyline perspective, I'm interested in Hart versus Willow Nightingale, too. Not just because, Monet is waiting in the wings, but, who attacked Mercedes Moné? And Chris Statlander is basically a sword of Damocles hanging over Willow at this point because people are seeing heel turn all in the signs of heel turn all over this. Is she going to turn during the match? Is she going to cost Willow the title? Is she going to nail Willow after she might win the title or not? Or I don't know what's going on. It's too obvious for Julia to be the one to have to attack Mercedes. So it could be Chris. It could be somebody else returning. Who knows? But there's a lot of different directions they could go from this match to where they're supposed to go, which is essentially Willow versus Mercedes.
And keep in mind, before Willow got attacked in the dark last night as well.
Yeah, but that one was Julia, I think. But before Maniac goes, definitely to add on to that, remember, Julia Hart beat Chris Statlin for the title, and I feel like we never really had anything with them afterwards. Obviously, we had the Sky Blue and Julia with Willow and Chris, but they never really went, it just kind of skipped from Chris to Willow. It never... I feel like Chris should have had another shot at it. So we'll see what happens with that.
We will see what happens with that. It's plain and simple, guys. Timeless has been this reign. Timeless has been this performance. And timeless will be this match. Tony Storm going to hopefully make quick work of Miss Rosa and make her way back to the lot for some quality time. Mariah May has been struggling a little bit. I know the cronies always struggle. Shout out Solo Sikoa. But with that said, it's a little bit tough watching Mariah take all these losses in the Tony Storm garb. So we'll see how much that lasts.
I like Tony's new look after last night when her new makeup person, Thunder Rosa, gave her once over.
No, that was a joke, and the Academy will be hearing about that that issue. But speaking of issues, there's been almost no issues for WWE these last 6 months. They continue to roll, and we get into some Raw fallout here. Did we have a non-sellout at this Raw? I don't want to start trouble.
Okay. Like 100, couple hundred short.
Okay. Yeah, 12,000. 12,000. I mean, still doing over 10,000 a night is insane, but very interesting to see that run come to an end. The final boss will no doubt be able to make good fodder out of that when he returns. That happened. But besides that, we have Sheamus. Did you guys even notice this physique? Honestly, I guess I'll.
I thought he looked a little big, but I didn't see the Photoshop memes that were funny, but I thought he looked a little big, but. Nothing crazy. I mean, Sheamus has always been a big fucker, that is absurd. I would have lost it if I saw that on the timeline, but obviously that is not how he was looking in the ring. It's clearly edited, but even the left,
it's interesting because we've seen a lot of the guys who have been hurt for a while, they came back bigger as well, but muscle big. So it's kind of interesting to see Sheamus coming back is bigger, putting on weight bigger. Obviously, every person's different. He's still going to be a great wrestler. But it's definitely interesting to see where typically when they are long injuries, we've seen Randy. We saw even AJ's even shorter. They came back buff as hell when they came back from a long injury.
I think Sheamus said something about he was called up on short notice and he was expecting to come back this soon. So he's got to hit the gym, of course. But talk about lobster heads. I think he's been eating a bit too many lobster heads and maybe pies in his face or whatever the song is supposed to say.
Too many limes. He had too many limes.
Isn't that his old gear too that he was wearing? Was that he doesn't usually wear that, right?
That
was
that old green stuff.
That was awesome. It was awesome. And the old theme song, I love that. Sheamus was honestly like one of my favorite heels when I was growing up watching like Cena and stuff. Just because when he came in, everyone was like, literally, to quote a guy from his own country, who the fuck is that guy? And he just came in and started tearing shit up. He was like body slamming Triple H through the announce table. I was like, what the hell? Like, this guy's a problem. And to this day, Sheamus, man, I'm glad he's back.
I was too distracted by the old theme song coming back to realize, you know, what his physique was.
It's a shame for fame.
Sheamus has three crazy championship wins. When you look back at it, he has, first off, the first title he won, the first big title he won was a tables match versus John Cena, when John Cena basically fell backwards
through the table.
And Sheamus is just sitting there like confused, and they're like, he won. Then he bro-kicked the shit out of Daniel Bryan, like when WWE really tried to stuff out like the Yes Movement in its infancy, and won in like 20 seconds at WrestleMania. And then he bro-kicked the shit out of Roman Reigns after Roman Reigns beat Dean Ambrose in that tournament at Survivor Series, I think it was, or sometime in the fall after Seth Rollins got injured. Sheamus 515 says, I just whooped your arse.
I got a question for you guys. Yeah. Right now, is Sheamus a Hall of Famer?
Yes, over those wins alone. Did you just hear what I just said?
I agree. Hey, I agree. I'm just throwing out.
But I'm just saying, like, proposal. You know what the perfect equivalent for Sheamus is Eli Manning. Like, did he ever like knock your fucking socks off with like his ability?
He's an undercard Hall of Famer.
No, but he beat the most epic.
There's at least two runs where you're like, damn, that guy's fucking good.
Yeah.
Guys, how soon, if ever, do we expect Sheamus to finish his story, the Intercontinental Championship?
You never know. That could be a program with Sammy down the line. Who knows?
I could definitely see Sheamus versus Sammy like Royal Rumble for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah, would tear the house down. That'd be a great match.
Like, it says something like, and this could be applied to The Miz too, as we're just kind of off on a tangent here, but I don't mind it with WWE. But like, yeah, I think it's more quality of a superstar, like when you can do stuff without a title and like in a ridiculous storyline. They told Sheamus, like, all right, your shtick is that you like love fighting. Go do it. And like, he made it amazing.
Do you guys remember?
He made it to where it was one of the biggest pops on like SmackDown, when SmackDown is in a pretty good era right now.
Do you guys remember the Thunderdome era, the Irish pub fight between Jeff Hardy and Sheamus?
I do not remember it.
It's ridiculous because they were doing a pub fight, but it was the middle of the pandemic, so there's no one in the pub except these two, and Jeff Hardy's just on a ladder all of a sudden. Oh, man.
I really wish we had a WWE AEW Forbidden Door so we could have the Brawling Brutes versus the Blackpool Combat Club. That would sell tickets.
That would be nuts.
They should really do the perfect Forbidden Door would be like, you have 3 to 5 guys off limits because like each side probably has guys they don't want to touch. But then besides that, the other side gets to pick 2 performers to come like invade their pay-per-view and do it. Like, that would be amazing.
I feel like you got to do like Bullet Club versus the Bloodline, right? Is like the main event, or like the Elite versus the Bloodline.
You got Finn Balor in there with his old mates.
I saw an interesting post today, and it said that I liked the Judgment Day better during the Edge version. And I got to be honest,
the Edge version lasted like 2 months.
It was about that long. But he was on a TV every week.
Feel like 2 months.
But point being that like this is all I'll say is that the Judgment Day when they were under Edge, like at least they kind of had like a purpose or a message, like. They were tired of being thrown aside. They were tired of the people's bullshit. Fuck the WWE universe. Like, they were going to do things their way. The Judgment Day now is kind of just like, yeah, we run Raw. Like, we run the whole WWE. It's what we do. We run shit. Like, that's all they do. Now I get it. It's working. It's working. But I'm saying, I think there might be a legitimate discussion that the Edge Judgment Day did have a little bit more depth. Is that crazy?
Are they basically the preppy goths?
Yes, preppy goth.
Yeah.
I don't Yeah.
And what do they do without mommy now? My prediction is I don't think
that's
mommy.
That's our next topic.
Oh my God! I can't speak. Holy crap!
You're not the prophet, dude.
This is why this is my show. But as I was saying, I don't think the Judgment Day will be the Judgment Day when mommy gets back. I think eventually Finn's gonna want that title off of Damian, and there might be some feuds because even on Monday. Finn's like, we need to get our tag titles back. And Damian didn't say it, but he basically was like, I don't need those dumb titles anymore. I'm the champion of the show now. So we'll see what goes on with that. But obviously, mommy goes, and they're already predicting that we're going to have a new champion on Monday. We'll see. I'm all for the LMRT.
That's what they're supposed to. I mean, that's what they've advertised, that we're going to crown a new world heavyweight women's champion on Raw.
Yeah.
Did they say how they're going to go about that?
Nope, they haven't made any specifics so far.
Wow. Okay, so we're in for something. How do you? I'm
predicting that by the time mommy gets back, it's going to be like that meme of the guy walking into the apartment with the pizza and just seeing everything's on fire and people are just strewn about everywhere. That's going to be the Judgment Day when mommy gets back. But until then, we got to get a new World Heavyweight Championship for the women's division.
How are they going to do it? What's the match going to be? Who's going to be in it?
I think they're going to do it just like they did the number one contendership for Cody's title. They're going to do two three-way matches, and then those two are going to meet not next week, but later that very night.
I mean, I feel like you got to put it on Liv, right?
I don't think you can do a tournament because you have the Queen of the Ring tournament coming up. You don't want to over-tournament the audience.
I feel like you got to put it on Liv right now.
Triple H kind of loves his tournaments, though. That's what he's all about, isn't he? Because he like loves the King of the Ring. You know?
But you do the two tournaments with basically half of the same women's roster. It might be a little bit overkill.
I think they're going to be in trouble if in less than a week they're putting this on anybody but Becky Lynch, unfortunately.
I mean, Becky is still around despite what Meltzer was trying to tell us.
Yeah, sorry, dirt sheets. So so I think that truthfully that was true and that she just got called back and now she's like playing the internet because she can kind of use
that.
Well,
she's going on the UK tour. It's not like they called her to Raw. She doesn't have to go on the UK tour to go to Raw and become the new champion.
Okay.
I could see them putting it on Becky. I can see them putting it on Liv to fulfill her revenge tour.
But besides Becky or Liv, is there even like a candidate?
Nia Jax? I mean, she's been nervous. I know what I said. Nia Jax has been serviceable lately. She was built up as the big monster for Rhea to overcome, and she overcame her. But maybe she gets built back up as that same monster for the next women's world champion to overcome. I don't know.
And obviously, I mean, it's not really like a rule that needs to be done. But I don't think WWE is going to go into the draft with only one heel solo champ. I guess there's Damian. Never mind. Screw that. Could Nia be it? Would they really have a women's division run by Nia and Bayley? I just don't know.
I'm looking at the Raw women's roster. I mean, I don't see anybody else standing out here.
Those are the only three.
About Tiffany time, Rob.
Tiffy's the money in the bank.
That's Tiffy's going after Bayley.
If you give it to Tiffy, who's going to give the money in the bank for sure? Tiffy is almost like even money right now for money in the bank.
Yeah, and you got to think about who have they've kind of built up in the last few months on Raw. It's only the three that we've been discussing. It's Becky, Liv, and Nia. I think those
are a ton of chance.
I think those are – give me Candice LeRae.
Candice LeRae's
like heel turn. I don't think she's developed enough to be over enough to be a heel champion.
All right. Give me Chelsea Green.
Isn't she? Oh wait, yeah. No, that's a good pick too. Yeah.
I mean,
and it would make her
watched a couple of times. Is she credible enough?
No, but it would be a great storyline because she wants to get the hell off of Raw to get away from Adam Pearce.
Are you credible enough?
And then she would be stuck.
I'm the head of the freaking table around here.
Oh, yeah, talk to the prophet next to you. He might have something to say about
that.
Does he have
a better record than me?
Know your role and shut your mouth.
We need to update those records, by the way.
Why don't we? Let's do it.
I feel like I'm gaining. Because
the host of the show is a little lazy up there.
The host of the show has his hands in a lot of different things around here.
Hey, this train has
a lot
of
characters. What did I do?
We want
straight does have a lot of courage
so I can reestablish what the head of the table
that
is.
That is true. That is true, but we do need updated records. Maybe this weekend at Dynasty, we'll have a great prediction show there. But with that said, to put a button on this topic and everything WWE, no one besides Liv or Becky can become the next champion, correct? Nia Jax is not an option.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Part of them, that's like a sin on this show is trying to make her a candidate for the next title.
I'm not saying I put the belt on her. I'm saying they might. So prepare yourself. Make peace with your God.
Jesus.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Courtesy of Batavia Downs. Dirt or sheet? Dave Meltzer says, superstar Trick Williams, while he has incredible charisma, isn't good in the ring. You think this is dirt, Parthy? Legit facts? Some substance there? Or do you think this is just a pile of sheet?
It's bullshit. I mean, dude's saying that he had to be carried by Ilya Dragunov. I mean, did we not see NXT take over in WrestleMania weekend? I mean, and he's also saying something about what's the new dark, creepy woman on the NXT. There was somebody else he was like crapping all over. I don't know. I mean, like we just mentioned, this is the guy that was saying that Becky was about to take off just like Seth, and all of a sudden Becky's on the UK tour. So Meltz has been swinging and missing a lot with a lot more regularity recently in the last maybe few months or so. So I'm over Meltzer at this point. I mean, what he's basically, I'll refrain from saying who he's in the camp of or who he's in the tank for, who he's a shill for, but it's pretty obvious Meltz is not what he used to be. If he used to be anything else.
I'll say it. I mean, he's on Tony Khan's payroll. I mean, come on now. Every time he talks good about something and he's kind of right, it's AEW. And in WWE, he's just bullshitting after bullshit after bullshit. I mean, what the hell has he gotten right in within WWE over the last – in 2024, I can't say one thing that he got in right in that company.
Wow. Yeah, well, it's cheat, like they said. I mean, I'm a fan of Trick Williams. I don't really have much else to say. Put on a great match with Carmelo. It's stand and deliver, like Partham said. That was a good show. I've yet to watch the cage match. I plan on watching it. I've heard it was good. So, yeah, I mean, Dave's clearly in the wrong here. Even saying you got carried by Ilya Dragunov is like, it's not even an insult, I feel like. Ilya's just that good. And, like, he certainly didn't. Don't get me wrong. He didn't get carried, but no, Trick Williams is good. Dave is tripping, say the least.
Yeah. This seemed like sheet more than anything. Maybe he just doesn't like the, I don't know. It's hard to tell. Cause it has become more apparent, you know, the way that, Meltzer lies as far as allegiances. So, very interesting there. Let's see. I just got one more here, unless you guys want to talk a specific one we saw, but let's see. We got a story that Adam Cole was pulled off of TV because he's not seeing progression in his injury.
Mm.
The TV time is taken away from the progression he's seeing in his injury. So first off, as we talk about whether this is fake, whether this is real, what's exactly happening, we want Adam Cole to get better. Not a single person here doesn't want to see Adam Cole baby back in that ring as soon as possible, back on our TVs as soon as possible. But is this dirt legitimate substance or is this sheet? I'm gonna lean that this is legitimate dirt. I don't think this has any reason to be out there except to clarify why a superstar isn't on TV when he's been on TV. It doesn't seem like there's anything else that this could be for, unless something's happening completely under the surface and AEW is in a debacle and it won't be around in 5 years. Select, what do you got?
Yeah, I think this could be some dirt. There could be some legitimacy here. Obviously, even with the injury, they were still trying to keep Adam Cole a key role of the Undisputed Kingdom storyline. And all of a sudden, he's just not in the picture on TV the last couple weeks, which has hurt the Undisputed Kingdom and their storyline as well. But, I mean, what do you expect? So I feel like there could be something here. I mean, he was just running around backstage in a wheelchair and on crutches. It could definitely, you know, stress out that injury a bit if you're just running around as part of the show still. So I think this could be partially credible. He's been off TV for a little bit, and I hope he does get better because he's had a rough go these past couple of years with injuries, and we all want to see him at the top of the food chain in AEW at some point, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is some dirt. You got to think about, like, Obviously, they never expected this injury. We talked about how the Undisputed Kingdom's story has kind of faded out. They didn't expect MJF to be gone for 4 months when they started this one. They didn't expect Adam Cole to, I forgot what he did, but get hurt at Grand Slam. And you got to think about other sports, wrestling, other sports. When someone has a serious injury, they're not doing all this travel. Travel does not help rehab. And in any way, I mean, I can't think of another wrestler or athlete that travels every week to a game, to whatever, while trying to get a serious injury back under, back healthy. So I think it's real dirt.
That's a great point.
Has it really been since Grand Slam that he injured his foot?
Yeah.
It seems like ages ago. I mean, how long does it take to heal an injured foot? Do we
remember? Hand up. I was convinced that was fake. I would have bet my life.
It seemed like way too minor to be, but hey.
Yeah. We're just waiting for that moment that he's going to pull a Kevin Nash and like take off the blanket and step out of his wheelchair. But to what end? For what payoff? To maybe screw over Kyle O'Reilly's old buddy at the pay per view this weekend? I don't know that that's a big enough moment for him to, if he actually is healed and this is all just, you know, sheet. It turns out a smokescreen or whatever.
I thought that if they were going to do like the Kevin Nash scene, it would have been at World's End when he unveiled himself at the devil. So,
yeah, he's legit injured. They're going to eventually do that at some point. But is he ready? And then at what point do you do that if you do it?
That would have gone so hard if
he wait
up as the devil.
Oh, that would have been incredible. And you guys said it. Parthi said it exactly, that if this is a work, they overshot the landing already, and it's entering, like, you know, weird territory. So,
and dude, does he not come back? Does he not come back now until MJF is back? Like,
I think Max definitely comes back before Adam Cole.
Yeah, so like they got to finish that story. Obviously, they didn't end it like they ended it on purpose. So, maybe he stays out until MJF has like a big opportunity on something, and here comes Adam Cole.
Yeah, I could see that Adam Cole coming back first because MJF wants his revenge on Adam Cole. It's not the other way around. MJF will come back when Adam Cole's there because Adam Cole's the one he's going to want to be gunning for. Whoever's healthy first, it doesn't matter. I think they're going to want to have Adam Cole come back first.
We got
We got a big next 10 weeks for AEW. We got AEW Dynasty this weekend. We got AEW Double or Nothing Memorial Day weekend in Las Vegas. And then, like Rob Ryan alluded to, our prophet, we have AEW New Japan Forbidden Door at the end of June. So big chance for AEW to get its storyline, you know, telling kind of like, you know, streamlined here and get back on track. They've been putting on good matches, but obviously, you know, again, they're not struggling for money. No one's saying, you know, AEW is trying to rub two quarters together, but they definitely want to start getting some more attendance and obviously interest in the product and what for them is a contract year. So with that said, we're looking for excitement and we are looking at excitement from you. Thank you for tuning along with us. Thank you for tuning along with our panel, Michael J. Partham. We got Rob Ryan, the prophet. We got Slick Saturday. We got myself. Make sure you're following at WrestleWMotion because this is the show where you don't wrestle with your budget. You don't wrestle with your conscience. This is Wrestling with Emotion.
Yeah. So-